Rabbi Jonathan Sacks once reflected something to the effect of that the ancient Greeks embraced the holiness of beauty, while the Jews embraced the beauty of holiness. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah episode 187, Art, Eyes, and Holiness. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
E.H. Gombrich, author of the best-selling The Story of Art, of which millions of copies have been purchased and read, begins the introduction to his book with the following arresting statement. Quote, "There really is no such thing as art. There are only artists." What Gombrich means by this is that art is a form of expression, and that there is no official category known as art, so that some forms of creative expression qualify and others don't. Or, as he further adds, as part of the paragraph, art with a capital A has no existence. And he goes on by writing, quote, "You may crush an artist by telling him that what he has just done may be quite good in its own way, only it is not art. And you may confound anyone enjoying a picture by declaring that what he liked in it was not the art, but something different." End quote. This point is well taken. But then, Gombrich adds the following, quote, "Actually, I do not think that there are any wrong reasons for liking a statue or a picture. Someone may like a landscape painting because it reminds him of home, or a portrait because it reminds him of a friend. There is nothing wrong with that. All of us, when we see a painting, are bound to be reminded of 101 things which influence our likes and dislikes. As long as these memories help us to enjoy what we see, we need not worry. It is only when some irrelevant memory makes us prejudiced, when we instinctively turn away from a magnificent picture of an alpine scene because we dislike climbing, that we should search our mind for the reason for the aversion, which spoils a pleasure we might otherwise have had. There are wrong reasons for disliking a work of art." End quote. Now, Gombrich is a brilliant, gifted, and informative writer, and I have learned a great deal from him. And there are assertions in this paragraph with which I do agree. Enjoying a painting because it reminds one of one's home or of one's dear friend is indeed a perfectly fine reason for enjoying a work of art. And a dislike of climbing is not really a reason to reject a scene of mountains. At the same time, there is no question that from a Judaic perspective, there are certain images and forms of visual expression that we ought to appreciate more than others. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks once reflected something to the effect of that the ancient Greeks embraced the holiness of beauty, while the Jews embraced the beauty of holiness. And I would add that it is for this reason that Judaic tradition has exhorted us to embrace and focus on forms of visual media that inspire us to embrace the right and the good. Thus, when the chief rabbi in the Holy Land, Rabbi Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, wrote to the Bezalel Art Academy congratulating it on its founding, he reflected on the importance of art in Jewish expression. But he added the following, quote, "Towards the generality of artistic beauty as realized in concrete works, the product of human hands, our people takes an attitude which is positive and encouraging, but also restrained. We take care not to go to extremes or become inebriated, even when dealing with the most sublime and lofty things." End quote. Thus, while it is true that a dislike for climbing or outdoor activity or hiking does not mean that one cannot appreciate an inspired landscape painting, I would not go so far as Gombrich in arguing that there is never a wrong or incorrect reason for embracing a work of art. And while I am certainly not arguing that an incorrect appreciation of a work of art is always a Judaic violation, the emphasis of the Torah on the power of the visual medium to both inspire but also to lead astray can be found in its discussion of tzitzit, fringes added to four-cornered garments. Referring to the fringes, or perhaps specifically to the blue strands, which are the color of heaven, the Torah first speaks positively about visual inspiration. Uritem oto uzchartem et kol mitzvot Hashem vasitem otam, and you shall see it, and obey all of the commandments of God, and do them, And then in the passage, we find another expression, which is counted by many as a separate mitzvah, and which has inspired this episode. V'lo taturu acharei levavachem v'acharei neichem, and you shall not follow after your hearts and your eyes, asher atem zonim achareihem, after which you are led astray, or from which you are led astray. As many commentators understand it, this is a warning that is meant as an accompaniment to the tzitzit commandment and the visual impression that it makes. Or as Ibn Ezra puts it, and this is the Sefaria translation, the eye sees and the heart desires. The fringes thus serve as a sign and a mark that a person should not pursue the thoughts of his heart in all that his eyes desire. In a striking series of phrases, the Torah thus both encourages inspiration through a visual medium, the blue or the blue and white of tzitzit, and also warns against being led astray by other forms of visual media. We are asked, in other words, to focus our minds and hearts in a way that allows us to appreciate holiness in this world, how we, as human beings, are endowed with sacred souls, and how the glory of God can be discovered in existence. I have discussed in the past how some works of art can help inspire us in just such a way. And perhaps this entire passage, with both its positive and negative exhortations, is meant to inculcate in us spiritual humility and a capacity for awe in the way that we see the world. And one interesting example of human fallibility when it comes to our instincts in approaching art, Gombrich gives us the following fascinating passage. Quote, "We have a curious habit of thinking that nature must always look like the pictures we are accustomed to. It is easy to illustrate this by an astonishing discovery which was made not very long ago. Generations have watched horses gallop, have attended horse races and hunts, have enjoyed paintings and sporting prints showing horses charging into battle or running after hounds. Not one of these people seems to have noticed what it really looks like when a horse runs. Pictures and sporting prints usually showed them with outstretched legs in full flight through the air, as the great 19th century French painter Theodore Géricault painted them in a famous representation of the races at Epsom. About 50 years later, when the photographic camera had been sufficiently perfected for snapshots of horses in rapid motion to be taken, these snapshots proved that both the painters and their public had been wrong all the while. No galloping horse ever moved in the way which seems so natural to us. As the legs come off the ground, they are moved in turn for the next kickoff. If we reflect for a moment, we shall realize that it could hardly get along otherwise. And yet when painters began to apply this new discovery, and painted horses moving as they actually do, everyone complained that their pictures looked wrong." End quote. It was Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik who noted that the blueness of the sky, as reflected in the blue strands of tzitzit, is itself a reminder to us of our own limitations, because the sky is only blue when seen from a distance. We are meant, in other words, to realize that we are fallible beings, and we need the guidance of God in appreciating and approaching the world. Art can serve as inspiration, but it must help us find holiness, which, for Judaic tradition, is the most beautiful experience of all. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.